back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We are positively at Fadley's in Lexington Market. I smell the crab cakes, Don Mullen.
I smell the crab cakes.
TJ Smith is here. We're into segment two talking about running for mayor. And, you know, I created this Baltimore Positive thing 15 months ago. I think I told you that too, to talk about it. Who is going to save the city? How are we saved? And it's going to be us. I mean, it's going to be us. It's going to be all of us.
That's right.
And we had Barbara McCoskey, who's one of our first guests on Baltimore Positive. You can go back and check that at the beginning. She said, there's no Superman coming.
No Superman, there's nobody coming with a cape. That's right.
So, and it's safe to say, right, Nestor, that there are days when you wake up and you say, you know what? I might run for mayor.
There are days when that happens.
It certainly didn't work that way
well,
for me.
Well, how did it happen
but,
for you?
Like, but look, is that that's a big question I'm asked often, and I feel like I was drafted to be in this position, quite honestly. I went back and forth. I'm a man of faith, and I prayed on it and finally got clarity to jump off the diving board and do it.
Well, you had a good gig, right?
An excellent gig.
With a good boss.
You were working with a good guy.
I had an excellent opportunity, yes. But when you're pulled to do something and you have a greater calling to do something more, you have to follow that. So trust me, the flesh in me didn't want to, and I was back and forth, and that's why I was so late in the game before I made a final decision. And I've been a cheerleader for the city, and I will continue to be a cheerleader for the city. When I left the Baltimore Police Department in 2018, people wanted me to talk negatively about the mayor at the time, who was Catherine Pugh. I said, her success is our success, and I want her to be successful and unbeatable a year from now. And if that's the case, that means we've been making progress. When her situation happened and Jack Young was brought in to be the mayor, I said the exact same thing. His success is our success. I want to support him in any way I can because I want this to be the best we can. I lost confidence and lost faith that we are heading in the right direction. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do differently that people aren't doing? Well, one, I recognize the fact that we need competent, capable leadership of diverse backgrounds, have seen and experienced different things, and bold visionaries. I feel like it's time to reset and get us out of the political mindset, because the political mindset is what has handcuffed us. We're indecisiveness. You're scared. You want everybody to like you. If Twitter doesn't like what you said, then you have to go back and change it. No, you have to be full steam ahead, and you can't be a political opportunist at this point in time. You can't want to run for this office. What do you really want to do? You have to be focused on what we need done right now and make decisions which are in the best interest of today, not the best interest of your political future. So how do you accomplish that? I'm not a guy who's going to play both sides of the fence. I will say it clearly. People who want to kill and hurt other people need to be the ones occupying jail cells.
Now, that shouldn't, what, TJ?
That shouldn't be controversial.
It is. And that's a matter of fact, that's where I'm going to jump in, and I apologize for interrupting you. But I want you to expand upon it, because Nestor and I raised this. We talk about themes. Mm-hmm. This comes up all of the time. We're in this strange place, not just in Baltimore, but in other cities, where we set up these false choices. Good cops, bad cops, make the city safe. Can I be for supporting the police without being for police brutality? Do I believe bad guys?
Right.
You know, Scott Schellenberger, who's going to come on, another guest out in Baltimore County, you know Scott well. Scott's a great believer. If you're doing crime, you need to be in jail. It doesn't mean that you're not for judicial reform and other things.
The thing that bothers me the most is when your brother gets murdered by somebody that's attempted to do this three or four other times in three or four other ways.
And we ask the question, why?
Or you say robbery gone bad. Right.
Why are we in this bad place, TJ? Walk us through this.
We've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. So what's happened is we've seen some horrific crimes committed by thugs in uniform. Period. There have been some thugs that infiltrated the profession of policing. It's not a blanket over all of policing, and I'm not going to sit here and acknowledge that and say that. I wore the uniform.
But if you were on the gun task force,
you should not have been in uniform. You shouldn't have been carrying a badge. You shouldn't have been working for a police department. That happened. With that being the case, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, now we can't police. We need police to police constitutionally and ethically. We also can't over-police, and we can't over-incarcerate. People get, they want to conflate the idea. I'm like the most liberal when it comes to drug stuff. Like, I don't believe that we should be locking people up for marijuana, even possession of drugs. They should be going straight to treatment, not going to a jail cell. They shouldn't be occupying jail cells. The clear and present danger in the state of Maryland and the city of Baltimore in particular are people who illegally possess handguns because they're not afraid to use them. 325 of the murders last year, I think, were committed with handguns. These are the people who are clear and present dangers who we have to focus on, and we can't be scared to do that. If we start tiptoeing around that issue, that's a signal to them. You saw the numbers come out at the beginning of this year as to the victimology, as I call it. And it's not to harp on who the victims are and the fact that they had criminal past. It's the fact that if you know someone's been arrested X amount of times, you know that half of the time, if you've been arrested for a gun, the odds are likely that you're going to be a murder victim or murder suspect. This is victimology, and these are how you get programs or intervention or even punishments in place, because sometimes we have to save people from themselves. I want to give a couple of quick stories real quick. Curtis Deal, this name has been brought up a lot. Back in 2017, he was running from the police, had a gun in his hand. This was a body-worn camera. It was one of the first body-worn cameras that the Baltimore Police Department released. I was there at the time. He runs past the police officer, then turns and pulls the gun up and aims it towards the police officer. Police officer shoots him, ultimately kills him. He turned 18 in November of 2016, and it's February. He had been arrested 3 times for guns. 24 hours before he was killed, he was in jail for a gun possession. This can't, the system is the reason he's dead at the end of the day. I mean, of course, his decision, but the fact that we're not protecting people from themselves. I believe in reentry and some reform behind the walls, because we can't strengthen young people that are behind the walls to come right back out in society to do the same thing over and over.
I've had 5 people in the last 6 months in my walk of life. I was in downtown Miami with the Ravens game in September. I was downtown Baltimore. It's happened a couple of times. And this happened in Cleveland on a subway last week, Christmas. Guy gets on. I'm alone. He says to me, "I just got out of jail. Help me." That's happened 5 times in the last 6 months. In my life, just in the places I walk, in the places I'm, I just got out of jail. Help me. And I'm thinking, am I about to get robbed? Right? And if I am, this guy just admitted, and I'm guessing if he just admitted he got out of jail, he's not looking to rob me. He wants a dollar. He wants something, right? But I'm thinking to myself, what do they do when they let you out of jail?
They give you your dated ID card and your bag of goods that you went in with, right? And I say this being facetious, but I'm serious. The streets have a better reentry package than we offer right now, than the state offers right now. Now, when I say that, is when somebody comes home from being incarcerated for a while, they'll have a woman waiting for them. They'll have a gun waiting for them. They'll have drugs waiting for them. They'll have a corner waiting for them. And some of the people might be able to reject
it. We'll take you back.
Some might be able to reject it. But then when they start getting rejected, application, reject, then it's, I'm going back over here. What you just described is exactly what the problem is. They should be coming out and walking into opportunity. And those people who say, oh, we don't deserve to give them anything, well, you're creating another criminal. We actually know, we can identify, this person is a criminal, former criminal, whatever you want to call them, but this person's at risk of reoffending. We should be doing everything we can. And there's stats and certain...
To protect all of us.
The homicide.
To protect us.
93% of people, this is an Alabama study down in Alabama, 93% of people who left federal incarceration and went into a job did not reoffend. Right. 70% of those who did not have a job within 4 months were back in
jail. Well, there is no other option.
We hear those stories all the time.
Exactly.
And the data, the analysis, and I know you know these numbers inside and out, but for our listeners, and again, we're with T.J. Smith, mayoral candidate, the numbers in the recent homicide analysis in the city are stark.
Yep.
81.9 of those that were killed had previous criminal records. 40.2 were arrested for violent crimes. 67% had drug arrests. 44% had arrests for gun-related crimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what you're
saying.
So if
you're in the suburbs, know who they are. Criminals killing criminals? Is that's a perception? That could be a county perception.
I would often say, you know, yesterday's suspect can be tomorrow's victim. I would say that often as we went through this stuff, because that's what you would see. And it goes back to the retaliation we talked about. That's part of this. But if we're not setting people up and taking them out of the environments that bred this, then we're perpetuating the idea. When I talk about concentrating on people and places, that's a crime focus. We talk about data analytics and intelligence-led policing. They can't just be buzzwords. They have to be applicable application and operational in this. The eastern part of Baltimore City, west part of Baltimore City, West Baltimore, East Baltimore police districts represent about 5 square miles total. They represent 1/3 of all the murders that occurred in Baltimore
City. We hear that over and over.
Then if you add in southwest Baltimore, that represents 1/2 of every 2 murders that occurred happened in one of those 3 places.
Say that again for our listeners.
So 1 out of every 2 murders that occurred in Baltimore City last year happened in either east, west, or southwest Baltimore.
So how many square miles total in that?
That's less than 10 square miles.
Less than 10 square miles.
89 square mile city. And the problem is it has never moved. It's always been that way. The numbers are elevated last year, but when we have the under 300, it's still the highest and disproportionate amount occurring in these areas.
Okay, so TJ, I got the guy and the gal behind the wheel of the car right now. They're listening and they're screaming at the podcast. Mm-hmm. They're saying, "Oh, that's great, TJ.
What are you going to do about it?
They want to know. Get specific with us.
Those are the areas that we have to actually focus law enforcement on. We have to put more officers in those areas. And how do we put more officers in those areas? We have a problem recruiting. There are 200 plus police officers working admin positions in the police department right now that can be civilianized. We can rapidly civilianize 100 of those and put 100 more police officers on the street, and they have to be deployed.
Why are they there? How did that happen, TJ?
Just over time, where no one's quite paid attention to that number of civilian. When I first started working, I was actually shocked at how many plainclothes officers had guns on that worked in admin positions. I'm like, wow. Because I've worked in 3 different jurisdictions, so I've had the luxury of seeing some different things.
These aren't folks, just to be clear for our listeners.
Yeah, define.
They're not injured.
They're not folks
suspended.
Who are put there because they're in trouble.
Right.
Or were bad cops.
These are able-bodied.
You're talking about people, they could be handled by Nestor's son, who's looking for a job. They can be civilianized.
Exactly. And where we are right now for the need to actually put, but again, the policing aspect is one, but the wraparound services that are necessary. I don't, like we say, jobs. One of the big problems, we need jobs, obviously, but if we build a company right now in Baltimore and whatever industry it is, and we don't have a qualified workforce, and we fill those jobs with San Francisco people, with Atlanta people, with DC people, that does nothing for the Baltimore residents. We need to educate people for the jobs that are available. So beyond just jobs, we have to educate them for the jobs that are available. If they aren't educated for the jobs that are available, it's negative reinforcement because they're going to eventually lose that job. They're not well prepared for that job.
So does that look like partnerships from you?
Absolutely,
private partnerships or working with community colleges? Is that is that what we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about even earlier. We're talking about childhood education here. We're talking about the school system
education
on the whole. Every one of these 17, 18, 19-year-old people doing murder, 10 years ago they were an 8 or 9-year-old kid that went to a broken school and a broken family in a bad neighborhood.
Which then is trauma, and that is a whole other point. I borrow a phrase from education when I say some communities need individual development plans, right? We're putting 21st century schools in communities, but we're not improving the greater neighborhood around the 21st century school, so we're going to continue to get the same output from the school. Just because it's a new building, it doesn't necessarily mean you're getting a new product out of it. We need to make sure we're building in an infrastructure around the schools as well, and something that I'm going to roll out soon in my policies of the community school concept. I want to put it on speed. I want to take it up to another level, and I want to pilot. And I have a program to pilot the community school system by ramping it up a bit, because we have to look at all of this stuff is connected. All of these things are connected. If it takes when we talk about transportation, if it takes your parent a couple hours to get from east to west Baltimore, east Baltimore County to west Baltimore County, and you have this idle time on your hands, you are going to be at higher risk of committing a crime, especially if you live in an environment where that higher propensity exists. But we have to change some of these communities that are just, they're numb to violence. I mean, I was speaking with Marvin Doc Cheatham the other night. And he, the Matthew
Tell
Henson
folks
area,
who Doc Cheatham is.
A former NAACP president of Baltimore, and he's the president of the Matthew Henson Neighborhood Association. But I'm speaking to him the other night, and he spoke about in 2018, they had 19 murders in the geography that is the Matthew Henson area. In 2019, they had 9 murders. So, of course, they're working towards zero. But just think about that. 9 murders. Just think about where some people live that don't experience things like that. It is outrageous, but it's the same communities that continue to experience it. So we have to build up. And one of the things I also want to do is increase the reward money to provide tips. That's a police trust thing, and I'm not going to excuse that.
Well, the whole snitching thing, we're 2 decades out on that now, right?
It's interesting. It's one of, and we'll, I know as we talk more today, we'll get into the FOP, and it's a complex relationship all across the country. But one of the things that I looked in their most recent criticism of the plans put out by the mayor and by the commissioner, they're indicating that we've really lost the street intelligence, that the informants, as they call it, and you're sort of alluding to that, that we need information.
I'll never forget, I was part of a federal trial, and Andy Smith, a former federal prosecutor, and I spent a month plus together as I was the case agent, and when she introduced the witnesses to the jury, she said to the jury, "You're going to have people up here that have bad criminal records, that lie, that you would say I would never hang out with." You're right. You would never hang out with them. So you wouldn't have the knowledge that they have about the inner workings of what's going on.
Their world is different.
So when they come up here and say, "Yeah, I committed crimes," and "Yeah, I did this," that's what they do, and they hang out with people who do the same, and they're corroborating the information that we're putting forth as evidence. We have to do that. We have to allow our detectives and our police to cultivate informants, and some of that happens with some of the low level crime. I mean, the drug distribution that, you know, we don't need to send somebody to jail for life for, but you have to work those angles. It is impossible.
Some people
not
would
to
say the drug distribution and the guns and the intimidation, but that's at the root of all of it, right?
Well, it's certainly
it's
the
not
root.
A small thing. I mean,
no. I'm not suggesting that it is or it isn't. But we have to look at right now. Drug distribution is going to send you to jail longer than a gun violation in Baltimore. I don't know if y'all noticed or not. If somebody was walking down the street right here in front of Fadley's right now, and they had a gun in their waistband, and the police see them adjust it, and they grab them, and they take them in. It's a misdemeanor. They're going to be out of central booking in a few hours, and they can get their record
expunged. As long as they didn't point it at anybody.
As long as they didn't make
what it. What should happen?
The person who has an illegal gun should have a certainty of consequence and punishment. Period. I believe that the possession of illegal possession of a handgun should be a felony, or it should have some certainty of consequence if it's not a felony. But we have to have some sort of punishment. The fact that if that same person is walking down the street with a pocket full of heroin, not that it's a good thing, but that person gets caught, that's going to be a felony. They're probably going to plead guilty to this felony, and they're going to need the governor to pardon them. And they might have actually been selling drugs to get clothing for their child or whatever. And I'm not excusing either behavior, but what I'm saying, the clear and present danger, that person with the gun who was actually going to come shoot one of us is going to walk out of jail and be
back,
able to go get one.
I want to go back to your gun point, because I think it's a question that people ask Nestor and me all the time. They say, when you have folks on, ask them how they're going to get guns off the street. I mean, the folks on social media that talk with us say, "Look, it's great you guys are
gun
doing it.
Interdiction.
Ask how you're going to get them off the street."
Gun interdiction. One of the ways, like Baltimore police, I think confiscated about 1,900 guns that were possessed illegally last year, 2019. All right, that's fine and good. Do we feel any safer? The fact that they're able to be replenished the way they are tells you there are moments when you do drug interdiction and you pick off 10 kilos, 100 kilos, and you can feel the effects of that on the street. You have people coming to you saying they can't get high. You know, that's a moment of treatment, right? They can't get any product. We don't have that problem with a gun. People are getting the guns. So it's gun interdiction at higher levels. It's working your way up, using a gun arrest to build a big gun case. We have to figure out where they're coming from and who they're coming from, because the way that they're coming in, this is not somebody breaks in the house and steals a gun and you go on. This is suppliers. And rarely, you think about this, just think about it for a minute. How often do you see a press conference for, "We arrested this gun trafficker out of Tennessee, out of West Virginia, out of Southwest Baltimore. We confiscated 48 guns from out of the basement of this home. But you do see the piles and piles of drugs on the table. We have to go higher level and do gun interdiction and really
focus. Does that require federal and state cooperation?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a very good federal and state and local existing relationship, but we have to be more well coordinated. One of the things that I'm going to start as mayor is GunStat, where we're also following the guns through the prosecutorial process and focusing on outcomes. It's one thing to just get the person. It's another thing to focus on the outcome. We have to focus on the outcome, and there has to be some meaningful intelligence-led policing involved in this. What are we going to do? We're going to interview this person. We're going to find out where they're getting them from. We're going to track them through the system, and we have to go after the suppliers. The supply is what is fueling a lot of the violence in the street, because there's so many guns available, they can just get another
one. I'm still trying to get my head around. I don't know about you, Nestor. I'm back a couple of minutes ago when you said a young man could be walking out here on Packer Street. He got his Glock in his pocket. Yep. Police officer sees him, picks him up, and a couple hours later, he's out. Yep. I'm guessing, now again, you're the expert on this. I'm guessing the kids on the street know that Devon's going to be out in a couple hours.
Of course.
No big deal. Therefore, I'm not afraid to walk down by Nestor's house with a Glock, because if they pick me up, I'm going to be back at it to 7-Eleven.
It influences your behavior. You know, I mean, if you know you can get away with something, you know, with your parents, with school, with your boss.
Or if you're the president of the United States.
If you know you can get away with it, you're going to continue to do things and get away with it. You're going to push the envelope further. We have to create distance between the suspect and the gun. If they know there's a consequence, if they know I can't have that gun on me because if I get caught with it, you're creating distance, which means if they have to store the gun and then go retrieve it to carry out their crime, you have a better opportunity for the victim to get away. Now, again, that's preservation of life. It's not solving the gun problem. But the more people are hesitant about carrying a gun, the less people are going to get shot. We have to change our way of thinking. Our paradigm shift in Baltimore is necessary.
But before we go to a break, and again, we're with T.J. Smith, Baltimore City mayoral candidate. T.J., put a face on it for our listeners. A 14-year-old, how challenging this is. A 14-year-old young man, let's say, is being picked on at middle school somewhere in Baltimore City today, and he's had enough, and he says, daggone it, by the end of the day, I've had enough, I'm going to get a gun, and I'm putting an end to this. Yeah. He's never had a gun. How quickly can he get his hands on a gun in Baltimore City?
Oh, very quickly, and that's the scary part, because we've had them take him to school, and we've seen that. Fortunately, that's not the biggest problem.
By the way, before TJ finishes, he's got all kinds of fans coming in to fade.
It's like
we have a rock star here or something.
Very blessed.
They all want TJ's autograph. Yes, so I'm sorry, go back. You said it's very easy to get a gun.
Very easy. It's easier for some of these kids to get their hands on a gun than it is to get their hands on an apple. And again, it goes back to decision making. What processes are in place in order to divert that young person from carrying out their anger that way? The school system, I think, has been doing a much better job with the bullying situations that we see, where people feel so threatened they have to navigate through these communities where they might not feel safe. That's incumbent upon us to do something about, and everything is intertwined. When we talk about workforce development, we talk about education, we talk about crime, we have to talk about healthy communities.
We're going to talk about opioids. We got a lot to talk about in that final segment.
All of that is tied together, and really important is accountable government. The fact that we've been so distracted with corruption, we can't focus on the things that we need to focus on, and that's part of why we need and why I'm running. We need to.
Do you have a hatred of incompetence?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you're qualified then.
Yes, that's our standard.
Don's first qualification.
That truly is one of the reasons I'm here. And I don't want to sit back and say I've seen it and I said, oh, I can do this. No, it wasn't that simple. But I'm like, I've seen bad decisions get made. I've seen really poor decisions.
As a former government official, Nestor knows. He's heard me say this. Recently, we've had a delegate. I mean, there was actually, and again,
I used to yell on the radio, all politicians are crooked. And when I would do that,
I'd go crazy.
He called me, Jim Smith's not crooked. Right. I know this guy.
Kevin
Cameron. You're wrong. It's like saying all police, right? Because
it makes us angry. It's the same way you make us.
You should be angry.
But in the wake of this, and I know we're overdue for a break, in the wake of this, there was actually another elected official when Delegate Glenn resigned recently because of her federal charges, who suggested, well, you have to understand we don't make a lot of money.
Get out of here.
It was the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Yeah. And Nestor knows I don't know if to make those kind of critical. It was the most... I was sitting at home and I wanted to kick the TV. What are you talking about?
That's the society that we've moved towards, that we make excuses for bad behavior instead of accountability, and we think that that's okay because of circumstance, and it's not. And we can't double down on that. That's ridiculous. And you grow up to think something like that. I'm glad. And I remember the day of the GTTF, and I know we have to get to break. The day of the GTTF. I'll say this. It was. I hate to say it was pleasant, but to see how many Baltimore police officers' faces were hanging low and the embarrassment, that's a good problem to have, because they were sick to their stomach as to what they found out. And I know a lot of people think, well, it was so widespread. It was isolated to X amount of officers.
Well, it has to be isolated.
Exactly.
Everybody's in on
because
they're all going down.
Exactly.
Right?
Because
you want to commit crimes,
you're dealing
make it a small
with
crowd.
Hardcore criminals. And when you deal with stuff like this, you're dealing with an isolated group of politicians that... When I say disappointing, I mean, and I don't want to speak ill of the people who did this. I look at some of these people who, some are the age of my mom, and I looked at in a motherly type fashion. And when you read through the indictments and see the sophistication of the crime, it's like, it reminded me of when I was in undercover narcs and how narcotic or drug guys operated. And just thinking, like, why and how did you get to this level to think this is okay? But I've been in public service all my life, and we don't make a lot of money, but you get into it for that purpose. You want to help. You know?
TJ, you can imagine, folks would call in the wake of what happened with Mayor Pugh, and they would say, just like you said, did you have any clue to... I said, the mayor and I had a close relationship. We were working on things in a regional way. You could have... just knocked me over if you would have suggested that she was involved in that kind of activity. But the bottom line is, right, we've got to do better. We've got to expect better. We've got to demand better.
All right, TJ's here. Think different is the slogan. New mayor, new culture, new Baltimore. We've got the cards. Everybody's giving TJ love. We're down here at Fadley's. One segment. The next segment, if we run a little long, I'm just going to be more hungry for the crab cake.
Okay.
So it's fine. Right. We're coming back. Martin O'Malley's going to be joining us soon. Give us some more guests here.
We got
the whole list.
I do have a list.
Give me the whole list.
Wait, keep talking. I got to find a list.
We're going to be over at State Fair in Catonsville. We're going to be at Jennings in Catonsville as well. If anybody's going to the Super Bowl, we're going to be in Miami as well.
Man, we've got Attorney General Brian Frosch. We've got former Governor O'Malley. We've got Kwesi
Mfume,
Terry Hill.
Bobby Zirkin. Didn't he retire?
Bobby Zirkin talking about his new chapter. We've got Kirby Fowler. We've got
all-stars.
Bill Henry, Baltimore County School Superintendent Darrell Williams. We got all-stars coming up. We got County State's Attorney Scott Schellenberger. It's going to be a big 2020, Nestor.
Baltimore positive. Eating crab cakes, learning stuff. Back for more with TJ right after this.